I don't really follow bloggers much. If I'm going to read, I don't know, it's usually an action story about counterterrorism or some political thriller. Or if it's work-related, I'm reading some automotive trend and really geeking out on connected car technology. Maybe kind of boring to you, but it does the job for me. However, in the world of blogging, I do know two official and publicly recognized authors in S-Sphere. One is a friend who by day, he flies commercial airliners around the globe while taking time to write witty and ridiculously sarcastic views on life. He's kind of chilling his blog jets right now, so to speak, but you've got to muse yourself and read some of his past posts. They're available on contemplating.com, contemplating.com. It's some of the funniest commentary on day-to-day life or current events at the time that you'll encounter, trust me. Another blogger is my friend Diane Wagner. She shifted gears from the world of market research to writing about her love of joy-inducing food. And that, my friends, is who we're going to talk with on this episode of Beyond My Day Job. Keeping consistent with stories about people who commit to what I call high-effort hobbies, Diane's going to bring us through the highs and lows of her trip to bring the culinary scene to all of us. So grab your favorite beverage or snack and settle in, because we're going to talk with a bona fide foodie.
Hello.
Diane.
Lonnie.
You sound so near and clear.
Oh, so do you.
Despite we're on opposite ends of the country.
That's right. The amazing power of technology.
Oh, my goodness. All in the palm of our hand with these little mobile devices. It's lovely.
I know.
Well, thanks for joining us.
Oh, thank you.
So, folks, we have the delightful Diane Wagner of Deathbed Food and other amazing ventures that she's going to share here. So I think you had shared with me earlier today, Diane, that, and I didn't realize it, but you said it's been 20 years since we've first met.
Yeah, I know. I'm in shock about that.
So what were we doing 20 years ago? Something boring, something very analytical and researchy,
yeah.
Right?
Pretty buttoned down, yeah. Analytical, yeah.
Yeah, I think I it didn't leave my nest, so you escaped it, but I still fascinate about it, oddly enough.
Well, I didn't escape it till 2011, but that's different. We'll get into that.
All right. Yeah, so... ladies and gentlemen, so Diane and I worked together, and then we had always lived. I'm based in Michigan, and Diane was in California at the time in the Los Angeles area. And after we parted ways professionally from an employment standpoint, we stayed in touch, right? And then suddenly you just sent me this message and said, "Hey, I'm starting up a food blog."
Yeah.
And I'm like, "What?" So that's what I want to explore and have you share. I know you had a pretty wild ride and continue to do it. So
it's been wild.
So let's get into it. Why and when did you become a food blogger? So what was going on?
Yeah. Well, that's a really good question, Lonnie, because seriously, like, you know me. I mean, I was one of the most buttoned down conservative people you ever imagine. And I eat boring, but but it was around 2011, and I'd been laid off in the Great Recession from one of my market research jobs, and was still kind of puttering around that industry, but at the same time, maybe was having a midlife reinvention of some sort.
not a crisis.
Not a crisis. You noticed that, Lonnie. Yes. I like that about you, the detail-oriented. It's the data part of you.
It is.
Anyway, so reinvention and just wanted to embrace my creative side and have some fun and pursue some passions. And food was always a passion. So, that was kind of what was going on.
Okay. All right. I'm looking at it online right now, too, and your blog is titled Deathbed Food.
Mm-hmm.
Why that name?
Well, I had to get that website because it was sort of an evolution out of my life organically. But basically, my whole adult life, ever since I could remember, I've been saying, when some food was good, I'd be saying, oh my God, this is deathbed food. And I just, and I just didn't think about it. And then I heard later from some people, oh yeah, I kind of thought that was weird when you'd say that. But, you know, I kind of got it that you were, it was like an adjective. It was like good. But anyway, so I'd been saying that. And then one night my husband and I were having dinner out, and we had this butterscotch creme brulee. And I said, oh my God, this is deathbed food. And then, the next day we were talking to his daughter, and I was talking about the dessert, and he said, oh, it's deathbed food. And then he said, oh my God, that's your blog. And I said, oh my God, it is. And, and so we rushed out and got the URL, the Twitter, and I couldn't believe nobody had it. And then next thing I knew, I was blogging, and I didn't even know what blogging was, because I literally didn't even read blogs. And
that's funny.
I know. I didn't read food blogs. And by then it was like totally like so has been, you know.
Right.
The Simpsons even did a show on it, I think, about food blogs being over when I started mine. But anyway, so I was, you know, I was in. So then I went and saw my parents, who are in their 70s, I think. Okay. And I said, oh, I'm starting a food blog. And they looked at me and said, well, what's that? And I said, well, you know, I'm going to write about food on the internet. And they, you know, give me this weird look. And I said, oh, I'm going to call it deathbed food. And then my dad says, oh, I remember saying that. And I said, what do you mean? Because, you know, I thought it was my thing.
Right, it was my thing.
My thing. And then he says, oh, well, yes, your mother and I were at dinner at the Blue Rock in Larkspur. And I had the halibut rosemary. And I said to her, this is what I want to have on my deathbed. And then I used to say that to her when she'd make amazing things. And I would say, oh, no, this is what I want to have on my deathbed. And then, now, mind you, that dinner he had out, that was like 40 years ago, you know?
Okay.
So anyway, so then all these memories came back of deathbed, you know, like, I remember that from my childhood.
Yeah.
So I think I just morphed it into an adjective.
Talk about subliminal.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. So what kind of food blog is it? Is it about cooking or restaurants or what is it? What do you really focus on?
Yeah. Well, a lot of food blogs are based on recipes and cooking. I don't have the stats on it, but I'd say a lot, like the most of them. And then there are some that are focused on restaurant reviews. And I don't cook, so
I don't cook.
I sort of take pride in that. So so I order in, you know. And
all right.
I'm really good with reservations, and you know, this is way before Open Table, so I'm very good. So I was out in the scene a lot, you know. I went out to eat, and so I was into restaurants and chefs and. So that's kind of the direction I went. That's what I was interested in, is restaurants and chefs and
chefs.
Food trends.
Okay, all right.
Chefs, really into chefs, yeah.
So, yeah, and we're going to get into that because I know some of the interactions you've had a chance to actually have some fun with some of the chefs in your journey or whatever.
Yeah, journey. Mm-hmm.
How about some stats? Can't get away from us. So, you know, you're a blogger and you're out there on, as Vince Vaughn would say, the interweb. give us some rundown on some of the blog stats that you know about.
Well, you are a stickler for data.
Yes.
I knew that coming into this, so I prepared.
All right, let's hear it.
Yeah, so let's see. So I started in 2011, so it's 7 years old. And a lot of people ask me, like, well, how many readers do you have, you know? Like,
of course.
Are you going to do advertising? What's going on? And so anyway, so I paid attention to that, you know, at various times more than others. Lately, I haven't been posting as much. We'll get into that more later.
Yep.
But when I was posting a lot, I was looking at my rankings. And in doing research for this, Lonnie, I went on Alexa, you know, Alexa rankings.
Yes.
Yeah. So I went on there. And previously, I'd gone on there, and I was 16 million, which... Don't laugh.
Wow. No,
16 million is not bad.
That's respectable.
Right. It's respectable. But, you know, compared to other like big name food bloggers, I was a little bit behind, which I was irritated. Like there was I was competitive, I guess. There was a guy called Consuming LA, and I thought it was well, no offense, I don't want to say anything bad, but his blog was different, you know. It was sort of like, oh, I had these fries and they're really good, you know. And mine wasn't about that. But anyway, so he was at 3 million. And I was just like, are you kidding me? Or 3 million?
Wow.
Now, Darren Dines, he had been around forever. And I love his blog. And it's super high quality. He was at 1.4 million. And then, of course, like if you look at Food Network, 1,400, you know.
Okay.
But still in the universe, 16 million, you know, that was respectable.
Right. So you were an exceeding, you were above, you know, 2 years ago, you're saying, you know.
Yeah.
Folks.
But anyway.
Okay.
Right. But in preparation for this, I went on Alexa, and now I'm not even ranked. So now I'm depressed, Lonnie, and I have to like regroup a little bit.
I'm glad I could help.
Yeah. But my Twitter is really strong. I'm very good at Twitter. So I have over 3,000 followers on Twitter.
Okay. All right.
And they're all organic, no bots, no bot followers, nothing.
Yep. Yeah. Okay. All right.
Yeah. And I've engaged with many celebrity chefs and restaurants on there, and I've had a lot of incredible opportunities because of Twitter. So my Twitter is really good.
With you having been in predominantly in the LA area and then, you know, throughout California, are most of the folks that follow you on Twitter, are they from that region or geography, or can you tell from their following, any international followers or any?
Yeah. I think I have followers from all over because, you know, the food world is the food world, you know?
Right.
And so people are interested in chefs all over and restaurants all over and travel and, you know, so, and I've looked here and there. I did look at my stats a few times, Lonnie, on the blog.
Yep.
And I did have people coming in from other countries.
Okay.
So.
All right. Mm-hmm. Oh, I like hearing that.
Yeah.
What's maybe your most popular post that you were tracking?
Yeah. I would say that, without question, Giada is it. Like, all food people know Giada. Like, she's the biggest food celebrity practically ever.
Okay.
And she's like magic. So anything I did with Giada, and I know I had a video up there at one point about her love for chocolate, and it got like the most views I ever had. I think was on a video. It was like 10,000 views.
Yeah.
So yeah.
The power of a popular search term.
Yeah. So one of my tips to food bloggers is just to put the word Giada in your post, you know, and like tag it and everything. And then it's really going to help you.
Don't come in by droves. Oh, gaming the system. But no, you said it's organic.
It is.
What are some of the tools you use from a platform or tech? Like, how do you get the blog up and going?
I don't want to say simple about it, but
yeah.
I'm not really a tech person. So, yeah. But WordPress, and then for hosting, I use Bluehost.
Okay.
And they have been amazing, amazingly supportive. So I like them.
My friend Tim, who I mentioned in the opening segment for this episode, he uses WordPress, and it's a really good platform. We use it within the company that I use. So yeah, they together are nice. For you bloggers, for you folks looking at blogging.
Exactly.
Definitely check out. So Bluehost and WordPress you use.
Yeah.
Okay, so take a step back. What surprised you starting out as the queen of deathbed food?
Well, I guess what surprised me the most is that people didn't seem to get it. Like, like some people got it, but other people didn't get it. Like the chefs that I would ask, they would get it, but because they talk about that stuff amongst themselves.
Right.
But a lot of people I would talk to, they would say, "Oh, I don't like that," or you know, "Oh,
it's morbid."
Yeah. Like what? It's about death, you know? Like. What, I'm on the hospice bed and, you know, my family's around me, like what? And then, you know, I would even get answers like that sometimes from chefs or other people when I'd say, what's your deathbed food? And then they would kind of go to not really a dark place, but, well, if this were my last meal, blah, blah, blah. And to me, it's not about death at all. It's very life-affirming, and it's just a great adjective. So I finally, after a couple of years, figured out a way to word it so that we didn't have to go to this morose place.
Okay.
So now when I ask people what their deathbed food is, I try to couch it and I say, well, you know, it's something so good that you could die happy at the first bite.
That's great.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Okay. Yeah. You're not going to go visit death row, you know, inmates and say,
right.
Hey.
Yeah. We're not quite there yet.
Right. We're not. So what was one mistake you made early on? How did you, you know, kind of lessons learned?
Well, I've learned a lot about myself, you know, through this. And let's see, one thing I've learned is that I can be kind of obsessive. So I don't know if you remember that about
me. I do.
Me.
Yes, I do.
Oh, you do?
Yes,
oh, my gosh.
Some of those presentations you festered over before visiting our customers. Yeah.
That's right. The ones you helped me with.
Yeah. Keep going.
All right. Anyway, so when I like something, I get kind of obsessive about it. And so when I started blogging, I was just 100% obsessed with it. So I was just constantly waking up in the middle of the night with ideas and writing things down and going to events and writing and posting and taking pictures and like correcting photos forever. And I mean, it literally took over my life.
Hmm.
And that's not a good thing when, you know, you have a life to maintain and responsibilities.
Right.
And, you know, this is at that point, just a hobby, you know?
Okay. So as a hobby, I mean, do you love blogging about food?
It really depends when you ask me. Because seriously, I just equate it to life. Like, you know, I have my good days with it, my bad days. And, you know, I've had periods when I'm just like, you know what, I can't stand this anymore. I'm done.
All right.
Yeah. 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 And I took it all down. I took the whole thing down. And then I just took my social media down, my Pinterest, my Instagram. I kind of hid my Twitter. I was just completely done.
Okay.
And then I realized, you know what, that's a little impetuous, you know, because I have a brand, you know, I have a following and I love it. And so anyway, then I put it back up and then I realized that I couldn't get my Pinterest or my Instagram back because, they said, oh, well, it's taken, you know, deathbed food. And I'm like, well, the powers that be, I don't know. It's like, yeah, it's taken by me, you know?
Right. Okay.
So I just start over with Deathbed Food by Diane on those platforms, which
Got
is kind
it.
Of. So anyway, I recommend people try not to be as impetuous and, you know, kind of understand that they'll go through periods of ups and downs.
Okay. All right. So I guess maybe a little bit here on the, you know, the downs. What do you hate regarding food blogging?
I'd say there are a couple of things that really stand out to me, Lonnie, and one of them is food festivals.
Why?
So, oh my gosh. So when you're a food blogger and you talk about restaurants and chefs and all that, it's kind of almost mandatory that you go to food festivals.
Okay.
Because it's the only way to get like a lot of news quickly.
Okay.
And you do get to see the new hot things and this and that. But honestly, they are so miserable. Like they're always in the summer. I don't know if you have any out there in Michigan. Do you ever go?
I go to beer festivals.
Okay. All right. Well, you know, then they're hot, right? Yeah. They're hot. It's in the summer and they're super crowded and there's long lines for stuff. And then, you know, you think you get all this great food and then you get little bites of food on little paper plates and then there's nowhere to sit. And, you know, you're elbow to elbow with people.
Yeah.
And then the worst thing is like, you want to go interview people. So you're in line to interview them and it's dog eat dog, you know, which gets me to my other thing that I hate, which is food bloggers.
Oh, so the competition.
Yeah. Well, you know, I went in with an open mind, Lonnie. I really did. I was just like, oh, hey, I can meet people with similar interests, you know, and I can make friends. I really did. I went in with that attitude.
Yeah.
But lo and behold, like every single event, they're just elbowing me out of the way. They're like, hey, I got to get this shot. Hey, why are you in front of me? Hey, you know, and then they ignore you at events. And I don't know. It's like this. And then they're on social media talking to each other like,
right.
Hey, at Susie. hey, you going to see at Chef Blah Blah at Blah Blah Fest, Blah Blah.
Right.
And, you know, meantime, I'm quoting them, retweeting them, this and that. No, I get nothing. So, you know, I kind of took the hint after a while. Gee, I guess I'm not going to make food blogger friends.
Right. Yeah. So yeah. You were trying to be nice and you get no online social reciprocity. Right.
Or even, I mean, the worst part is at the festivals and the events, because seriously, like, no friendship there. No. I'm doing my thing. You're doing your thing.
Oh, that's okay. I would have never imagined that. I figured, you know, a common cause brings, you know, good friends together.
Right.
So maybe kind of keep going on that, where your bubble was popped. What's the number one myth regarding food blogging that you found?
Oh, I think that's an easy thing to tell you, which is people think that you get free food and you don't. At least I don't, or very seldom. You know, I always went out to restaurants. I spent a lot of my money on restaurants, and that was just like my hobby before the blog, and if you will. And so I thought, oh, well, I'll just do this, and then at least it'll subsidize my, you know, my hobby.
Right.
Yeah, it was very rational. So, and then what you don't realize is that, you know, you go out to these restaurants and you buy these meals and this and that, and then you go home, you write about them, and, you know, people are happy you're doing it. It's really cool. And you're building your brand, and that's fine.
Sure.
But free meals and free food, extremely rare. So, like, to give you an example, one time I got invited by the PR person for this really good restaurant in Santa Monica.
Okay.
And they said, yeah, come on in and everything. And I'm like, great. So I was really excited because it's a really great restaurant. It's a little pricey, but I thought, oh, that's awesome. Okay. And I had blogged about them a little bit before, so that's how they knew me. So anyway, so I went. It was a great meal. And then the bill came. And then it's like, okay.
I got a bill.
You know? So, yeah. Become a food blogger and then get invited to pay for your own meal. You know?
Excellent.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good economic business model. All right.
Yeah.
Do my free advertising.
Right.
So yeah. You mentioned just kind of some of the ups and downs, but I mean, you've over the 7 years doing this, and I just, you know, I watch you online, and you and I have talked intersperse on some of your stories. What are some of the skills you've picked up as a result of running and authoring a blog?
Yeah, I think, you know, it was really unexpected because, like I said, I didn't even know what a blog was. And
right.
Now I really think of it as running a website, a brand, and you know, I've learned so much through all that. So, I mean, first of all, of course, I improved my tech and social media skills.
Okay.
So I'm somewhat comfortable on HTML and, you know, more up to speed on that, which I think is a good skill for anybody. Okay. And then I think also my photography is really way better. I mean, so I've learned to use the 5D, and oh my gosh, it's just amazing. Like, now I'm obsessed.
You have what's your camera? Do you have a Minolta or a Canon? Or,
Canon,
5D.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah. And oh my gosh, so now I'm into close-up photography, and yeah, and the macro lens. And so I transferred that skill recently, and I sold all this jewelry online. And I took all these close-up shots and Photoshop and this and that. I sold all the jewelry for like tons of money. So that's a return on the blog.
Fantastic.
Right?
All right. All right.
Yeah. And, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just, I forgot. And again, I can't appreciate because I don't blog, but just the fact that people are looking and reading a website. And I guess I just forget about the fact that, yeah, visuals on the landing pages matter. So I guess that photography skill really comes in hand because you want to have an appealing image, you know, that ties to the story.
Well, yeah, I think people expect, you know, photos, you know, regarding food.
Yep.
And there's, frankly, a lot of bad photos out there. Drives me crazy. And I've worked really hard, you know, on that aspect.
Yeah.
And then I'd say another area is just learning to interview people. I mean,
Okay.
I'm sure you're learning that with this, right?
I am, right. So,
yeah. So it's a good skill to have.
And you, looking on your site again, your main menus, you've got a decent quantity of video.
Yeah.
So you take video interviews while you're in the kitchen with chefs and things like that, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I do have quite a bit of video. I have way more than is on the site, actually. That's just a smattering.
You're saving the B-roll.
Yeah. But, no, video is a really important tool. And I think it's some of the best work that I've done. And, you know, a lot of it's guerrilla, you know, like at food festivals and and during special event dinners. One time I was at a Andrew Zimmern dinner and Bizarre Foods.
Oh, yeah. And, yeah.
Yeah. And we got back into the kitchen, which was amazing. And then we were able to ask him a question while he's in the kitchen. And at the time, he had just publicly talked about the LA food scene, how he liked it. And Anthony Bourdain, who I hate, he basically was, you know, complaining about it as usual.
Okay. All right.
And so anyway, so, you know, I asked him, well, hey, what do you think about the LA food scene? And he just kind of went on about how great it is, how cutting edge it is. And so I was really happy I got that on video.
Okay. Yeah, I've watched his Bizarre Foods and just, I mean, Andrew Zimmern, the stuff, I think that's on is it Food Network that it is?
Travel,
yes, because he goes all over the globe. Boy, he eats things that worms wouldn't ingest. It's amazing. So
I know,
Brave palate that Andrew Zimmern has.
Well, actually, I met him before that. That's why I got invited to that dinner.
Okay.
And it was kind of incredible how I met him. And this is kind of through Twitter. So when I say I'm good at Twitter or I like Twitter, I like it because it's opened up the world in so many ways. So one time I went into this restaurant in LA, it's called Inc. And the chef is Michael Voltaggia.
Where was the restaurant?
It was on Melrose.
Okay. All right.
And yeah. And at the time it was a new restaurant and getting a lot of buzz and it's amazing to this day. Anyway. So, I just popped in there. I wanted to just get a bite at the bar or something. And then I noticed that Andrew Zimmern was filming, across the room. And so I guess he was filming for his show.
Mm-hmm.
So I was on Twitter and I said, really cool watching Andrew Zimmern filming at Inc., you know?
Okay, right.
And then next thing I know, he RT'd that. And then he said, even cooler seeing you tweet.
So in real time, like how
real
many?
Real time.
What was the delay after you posted?
Like 1 minute.
No, that's fine.
Oh my God, I almost fell over. and so then when he had a break, I went up to him and I said, oh, I'm Deathbed Food. And he's like, oh, and you know.
The fact that you introduced yourself.
I know. Well,
I'm the Grim Reaper.
Well, it gets worse. So, and he's totally cool. He's like, yeah, that's great, blah, blah. And I said, yeah, you know, I'd like to take a picture with you and the chef. Can I do that? And he's like, yeah. So he goes over to the chef and he says to the chef, oh, do you know Deathbed over here? And so
I
saw him a couple of times after that and he always called me Deathbed.
That's great.
Yeah. So we're buddies.
That's great. You should send him a t-shirt.
I know. He would remember me.
He seems very personable.
He is so nice.
Other crazy encounters that you've had?
Tons.
Tons.
But one of them was related to Giada, you know.
Okay.
So I was mentioning her. The chocolate. And basically, I was a brand new blogger. It was at that one of the festivals I was mentioning in LA. And so she was the most popular person at the festival and everybody wanted to get an interview with her. And so I kind of finagled my way in the line and, you know, I didn't really know what I was doing. And anyway, so then I got up there and I said, hey, what's your deathbed food? And she said, chocolate, you know, something like that. It was pretty simple, but really, really, really sweet. And so anyway, like I said, it was one of my most watched videos. And then later I went to a blogging event and the food bloggers were sitting round table. This restaurant was bringing out food for us to taste. And this one woman across the table, she was a pretty well-established blogger, had a radio show. Anyway, so she says to me, oh, hey, you remember me? And I said, oh, yeah, you know, I vaguely remember her. And she says, yeah, you know, you cut me out of the line and I didn't get to interview Giada. And I said, oh, well, I'm sorry. I didn't know, you know. But she was so irritated.
So holding a grudge against a fellow food blogger.
I know. Do you see what I mean?
Yes, it comes back.
Okay. It's rough. It's rough.
I just have to ask, when you ask these folks that are in the midst of, you know, creating, you know, food sensation, have you ever been shocked by some of their answers when you ask them some of their favorite foods? So like, I would just imagine you asking Gia, it's like, yeah, what's your favorite chocolate? And, you know, someone ever come back to you and said, oh, I don't know, Reese's Pieces or, you know, something very mainstream or just unbelievably too common.
Yeah. No, actually, what surprised me is, you know, I asked this question mostly of chefs and, okay. What surprised me, and I know this is a family show, so don't worry, Lonnie, but but a lot of them would get into sort of like romantic elements, you know, like, oh, well, I'd be having champagne and roses and this and that. And I mean, honestly, some of it made me blush, you know.
Wow. All right.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, but a lot of it was very, I don't want to say mundane, but a lot of it really goes back to people's families, you know?
Okay.
And really childhood memories and mom's cooking. And, you know, a lot of it really gets very primal and simple.
Well, makes sense because it's very central to, you know, what they saw when they were growing up.
Yeah. Well,
inspiration from that.
Well, yeah, food is love, you know?
Right. So what's probably the single worst thing that's happened in your experience running, creating, you know, running this blog?
Yeah. Well, I would say probably a lot of people have had this problem, but I have lost my blog a few times. So
what do you mean lost? What do you mean? Lost your blog?
Yeah, it was gone, you know, like gone. Like,
okay.
Nowhere, like I couldn't log on. It was. I don't know where it was. And of course, the first time it happened a couple of times. But the first time it happened, I was completely panicked. Like completely panicked. So anyway, what can you do? So you get on the phone with the hosting company, and then you know you try to talk yourself down, and then you spend hours and hours, and you know they have to dig it out from wherever it is in the ether, you know.
And then you
learn, oh well, I should have been doing blah blah backup or blah this, like I'm a IT person, you know. So but you learn the hard way. So I would say the tech part is the worst part for me.
Okay. All right. Got it. I can appreciate that doing this. So it's not too bad. You know, you and I are doing this interview off of a pair of mobile phones and, you know, we'll record and I'll post and ta-da. But the backup point, that I'm glad you mentioned that. That's a good reminder for myself as well. So thank you for that.
Oh, you're welcome.
Okay. So go to the extreme. The success is top favorite success that you would claim, given deathbed food and your blogging with it.
Yeah. Well, there are many things that come to mind. I mean, for example, just one is I got to meet one of my favorite soap stars, which is crazy. I mean, so I won't go into that too much, but basically he had a cookbook coming out. And so I called, you know, over the agent and I got an interview because he needed publicity. And then I was like, oh my gosh, I'm in love, you know. But I would say my most proud accomplishment is that I was voted one of the top foodies to follow on Twitter in LA.
Oh.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. And it was by CBS LA. And
okay.
I was in there with Eater LA and Krista Simmons, among others, among
Got
two
it.
Others.
All right.
And I mean, those are like real, real deal things, you know, like Krista Simmons has 12,000 followers on Twitter.
This on Twitter. Okay.
Yeah. And Eater LA, you know, it's a publication, but they have 270,000 followers on Twitter.
Okay.
So I was just bowled over. I could not believe it. And then, and then, you know, the so, description, the woman says, just like being at the table with her, you know, it was great.
Nice. Yeah. So what happened as a result of getting that wonderful shout out?
Oh, nothing.
Really?
Yeah.
Just a vapor
just,
praise and that's
just
it.
Like, you know, I had a self congratulations party and I put it on my LinkedIn for a while and that was it.
That was it. Hey, next.
Yeah.
It's kind of in sales. What have you done for me lately? What have you sold last? Right. Oh, nothing. Well, you're worthless. Last year you hit your number, but you know, this year you're nothing.
Yeah. I didn't get the award again, so.
Okay.
Oh well.
Okay. Going through your blog site, I know you got several and there were couple that you and I talked about that you took some efforts through your creative writing skills as you've been managing this. So what's your favorite post? Or one of them at least.
Yeah. It'd be hard for me to pick one, but the ones I enjoy the most are the humorous ones.
Okay.
And I've discovered a love of creative writing and, you know, so I spend a lot of time on those and I really have fun with them. And so I would say one would be the president and the peas.
The president and the peas. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was basically a fable that I wrote and it was inspired by something I saw on Twitter, which was hashtag guacamolegate.
Guacamole gate. Okay.
Guacamole gate. Yeah.
Okay.
So I had to click on that, see what that was. And apparently people were upset because this woman had written a recipe in the New York Times about guacamole with peas. And then, I thought it sounded good.
not here.
No?
No.
Well, apparently Obama is with you, Lonnie.
Okay.
Obama tweeted about it and then it created this guacamole gate. So,
got it. Okay, so you wrote a fable based on that news article.
Yeah.
You want to read it for us if you can find it if you're at your computer.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. So Diane Wagner is going to read a story to you, ladies and gentlemen. So get comfortable with your jammies and pillows and favorite beverage or whatnot. So.
Yeah, I would down a beer right now, and it'll be much better.
Okay.
So, okay.
All right, the president and the peas.
Yeah. Once upon a time, there was a president who was shocked that the New York Times, of all publications, wanted to add peas to guacamole. He ordered his staff to tweet his outrage, thereby vetoing pea guac and creating guacamole gate. And then what President Obama had put on Twitter was, quote, respect the NYT, but not buying peas and guac. Onions, garlic, hot peppers, classic.
Perfect. I agree. Mm.
Okay.
Yes.
So now it continues. Now obsessed with guacamole, the president wanted to order it, but the real deal with onions, garlic, and hot peppers. He sent his staff scurrying to search all over, but nowhere could they find what he wanted, the dip without peas. There were guacamoles enough, but it was difficult to find the kind not polluted by peas. There was always something about them that was not as it should be. Garden peas, dried peas, snow peas, or snap peas. Even worse, previously frozen peas. That evening, a terrible storm came on. There was thunder and lightning, and the rain poured down in torrents. The president was craving guacamole, which he ordered be ordered in, but only if it did not include the lame legume. No such guacamole could be found. Suddenly a buzzer from the front gate sounded and the Secret Service answered to find out who was there. It was a disheveled young man with purple streaked hair and a spider tattoo on his neck. The kid claimed he had a special delivery of pea-free guacamole from Jose Andres's Mexican restaurant called Oyamel. The man presented a letter signed by Jose Andres stating the pea-free guacamole was sent as a service to America, a duty that he said he had because he just became an American citizen. So the president thought, well, we'll soon find that out. He didn't say anything, but he went into the kitchen, clear off the kitchen island, and laid the guacamole uncovered upon the granite countertop. Then he took 20 lemons and squeezed them into the guac. On this counter, the guacamole had to sit all night so that the dip would have time to break down, thereby revealing any potentially hidden peas. Luckily, peas take much longer to decompose than any other ingredient in the recipe. In the morning, the dip was inspected for any sign of pea infestation. The president tasted the deteriorated dip. Victory, he said. Heaven only knows what's in the guacamole, but there are certainly no peas. Nobody but this president could be as sensitive as that. So the president took Jose Andres for his personal chef, for now he knew that Jose had a real guacamole recipe, and he ordered an avocado tree ranch be planted on the White House front lawn. So that's probably going on right now in the White House as the president created his own scandal, Peagate.
Oh, that's great. The beginnings of a children's book. Oh, that's funny.
I think you're onto something, Lonnie.
Yeah, well, just the tone and the rhythm and you know, something that, you know, watch something grow. If you plant that tree. That's mm-hmm. funny. Now I can tell you wove in a real life chef into that story, right?
Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah, Jose Andres, yeah.
Yeah, can you, I don't know, who is he? Because Oyamel is the restaurant you mentioned, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, Jose Andres is one, I mean, I'm just in love with the guy. I mean, I respect him so much. I've respected him and loved him since the beginning of the blog and before that. And he is an immigrant who came to America from Spain.
Okay.
And he has since created a whole bunch of restaurants, but his start was at Haleo and he introduced Americans to Spanish tapas. So that's kind of like, yeah, that's kind of like a lot of his beginnings, but he's way more than that now. And he has just been named James Beard Humanitarian of the Year Award, Humanitarian of the Year.
Okay.
Because he's been doing really amazing work in Puerto Rico. And he created this whole system where he was able to feed thousands and thousands and thousands of people. So
Is this on the heels because of the storms and the hurricanes that tore up Puerto Rico?
Yeah. This was right after the hurricane.
Yep.
And he went in there right away. And, you know, he was right up there with FEMA. I mean, the guy is just amazing.
Okay.
So if you look on my blog and you search Jose Andres, you'll see like three pages of posts that come up.
All right.
So I've been blogging about him from the beginning after him to write about.
You have run into him, right?
Yeah, I finally met him 6 months ago, actually. Okay.
And he's... You were on tour. Something was going on in D.C., right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, he's based in D.C. Okay. And I had been out to D.C. before. And you know, he knows me and his organization knows me because I tweet about them a lot.
Got it.
And actually, at one point, my previous visits, I had been at Zytania, one of his restaurants, and I was tweeting about it throughout dinner. And then the server came over and said, oh, this is on Jose, you know.
Oh, wow. So, hey, yeah. You did get a free meal.
See, I told you, Lonnie. It's just...
took 7-11 years, whatever.
Right. Well, you know, I'm not in the black, okay? Let's just say that. So I'm on the radar. So he knew who I was. But I was out in D.C. 6 months ago working on the project I'm doing now, which is producing a documentary. It's called Ramon Rising.
Okay.
Yeah, it's about a farm worker boy. He became a pediatrician. Yeah, and we were presenting to the U.S. Department of Education. And we brought one of the girls who's featured in the film with us. Her name is Christina.
Okay.
And she is amazing. She is the most adorable girl ever. Oh my God. She's 18 years old. She had never been anywhere except for California and Mexico. And this was her first trip across country to the capital. Amazing experience. So anyway, so we were out there, and I'd been in touch with Jose's organization, and they said, yeah, come on over and meet us. And so his PR guy said, yeah, come on over. Can you come over at 2 o'clock or whatever? So I was all excited because I was like, oh my gosh, you know, I mean, like, I know I'm going to meet Jose, you know, this is awesome.
Right.
And I'm telling Christina, oh my gosh, Jose, like, he's big, you know. Anyway, so so we go to the offices and there's no Jose, you know. And so I'm a little irritated, but the offices are amazing. I mean, it's like a think tank, not only of restaurants, but of like worldly visions. I can't even describe.
Okay.
Anyway, but I was irritated because it was like, well, okay, like whatever. So then on the way out, the PR guy says, yeah, well, you know, keep tweeting because we read them and all this. And I said, yeah, okay, you know, whatever. So then so then we walked around the corner to one of his restaurants, the Mexican one. We're sitting at the bar, having some beers, and, you know, kind of like, I'm kind of moping around.
Right.
And then I thought, well, you know, I'm just going to start tweeting, you know, like, I don't know. So so Christina, poor Christina, you know, she didn't know what hit her. So I said to Christina, I said, hey, can you like look forward and look forlorn and look upset? And like, you're just, you know, look in the distance. So I took a picture and then I tweeted and I said, Christina is wondering where Jose is, you know, and then like hashtag where is Jose and, you know, stuff like that.
Right.
And then I got an idea. I said, okay, Christina, here, cause she didn't have a beer. So I said, here's some guac. I told her to put her head over the guac. And then,
please.
Like, you know, like she's just so upset. She's crying into her guac. So then I tweeted and I said, Christina's crying into her guac because she can't find Jose, you know, hashtag where's Jose.
That's funny.
Yeah. Anyway, but you know, I got nothing back, you know,
right.
And I do it to amuse myself. So then we left and we got into a Lyft, and I was just checking my Twitter just cause I was bored.
Mm-hmm.
And then I see this response. And it was from him, Chef, you know, Jose. And he says, oh, I'm here, or something like that. And I couldn't believe that. and then he sent another one right away. And he was like, you know, I'm, you know, I come or I'm here or something, you know.
Right.
And so then I started yelling, like, stop the car, you know.
Then, you're in the back of the Lyft.
I'm in the back.
Getting ready to leave the restaurant.
I'm in the back of the Lyft. And then, so I say, stop the car. And then I realize that nobody's stopping the car, you know? And so then I'm like, stop the car.
Crazy woman in the back seat yelling.
Yeah. So then we all jump out of the car and, you know, they think that I'm sick or something. And I was like, no. And I said, they're following me. I'm running. They're following me. And I said, Jose is at the restaurant, and, you know. and so then we get there. And then I say to the greeter, I say, oh, is Jose, like calmly, oh, is Jose here? And he just looks at me like, what a weirdo, you know.
Right.
Like, no. And then so we sat down and then I texted the PR guy. And then he's like, yeah, we'll be there in a few minutes. And so sure enough, Jose showed up and then and he talked to us for like an hour. It was amazing.
Oh.
An hour. Yeah. I know. I thought I was going to die.
I love that. That's a great story. Wow.
Thanks.
Yeah.
I know. I'll never forget it ever.
Did he talk to Christina much?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. I think that's why he showed up, actually.
Okay. All right.
I don't think he showed up for me.
Right.
Yeah, but I think the crying in her guac, I think, you know, and then she's just so amazing. And I think he can relate to her and, you know,
absolutely.
they really bonded. So, yeah.
So your gorilla tweeting paid off.
Yes, for once my guerrilla tweeting paid off. Yeah.
Oh, well, let's keep a high note on that one. What would you say is probably the very best thing about food blogging?
Well, what I'd say is that, first of all, food blogging is blogging, and blogging is writing, and writing is writing. So for me, it's being able to explore and get your voice out there and dig deeper into topics.
Yep.
And, you know, like a lot of what I do on Deathbed Food is more story related or news related. It's not necessarily like, oh, the foie gras was good, you know?
Eating French fries.
Or I've done that, you know, of course.
Right.
But no, I think if you like to write, you're going to love blogging,
okay.
Basically. Okay. Yeah.
What are you doing now with your blog and what's going on? You mentioned earlier Ramon Rising, which did you say it was a film or a documentary?
Yeah, it's basically my full-time focus right now.
Okay.
I've been working on it for a couple of years, and it's an amazing story. Ramon was an abandoned farm worker boy, started working in the fields at the age of 3. He was hungry his whole childhood, abused, speech impediment, just on and on and on. And he managed to become a pediatrician. So he's practicing in the Central Valley, California.
Okay.
And he is just doing amazing work, but nobody knows the story. So we're making it into a documentary film and also separately a film for classrooms so that it can be shown in schools nationwide.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Really? How'd you even get traction like that, Diane?
Oh, making a film is sort of like having a blog, like,
okay.
Like you don't making a documentary, you don't know where it's going to take you. So, a big part of Ramon's story is education. And one of the things we learned about is migrant education, which is a federally funded program, and they help migrant farm worker families and their kids, get through school and things like that. So we presented to a lot of migrant education groups, and all of them have said, oh, we want to show this in our classrooms, but we need a shorter film. So now we're kind of focused on getting that film done first, and then the full documentary, because really this isn't, I don't really view it as a film. I view it as a platform to create social change.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Wow. Congratulations.
Mm-hmm. Oh, thanks.
That's nice.
Actually, I'm going to DC next week.
Okay.
For the film again. And all right. We're going to interview Congress people about the story and really kind of learn about their stories. A lot of Hispanic Congress members. And it should be amazing. And
will Ramon be with you? Okay.
So just just doing video interviewing, and I'll be tweeting Jose trying to get a free meal, maybe.
I think you need Christine with you.
I think I do. I don't think I'm going to have any luck, Lonnie. I've already set that expectation. So.
But in all seriousness, I mean, that's a really respectable cause that you're marching towards, so that's really neat. I had no idea that you could kind of diversify this much on that. That's really good to hear.
It will make a difference, you know. It already is making a difference because we talked to so many people and so many more people are reading his memoir and learning about his story.
All right, well, let's come back to food as we're nearly winding down. I don't know, you were on the Letterman show and he had to write his top 10 or top 5. What advice would you have for, I don't know, other food bloggers, I guess?
Yeah. Well, I've mentioned it before, but I don't think I can mention it enough. So first of all, do not expect free food.
Okay.
or even great treatment. I mean, you know, in their defense, restaurant owners are busy and have
sure.
a lot of demands, but still, so don't expect free food.
Yep.
And then I'd also say work on your photos, because they're extremely important, and it's really hard to have any respect out there, I think, if your photos are not good. So,
okay, all right.
And that, by the way, is challenging, because usually you're in a restaurant, the lighting is not good, but do what you can, you know?
Okay, yeah.
And then I would say proofread, you know? That's a pet peeve of mine when I see blogs and or anything, really, and there are typos and things. I
right.
just think it's really careless, and, you know, this is your voice out there. So,
absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. And then I guess the last thing I would say is don't read other food blogs, at least.
Why?
Well, they can read mine if they want. No, I'm kidding. But no, really, because maybe later, like as you get more down the path. But for me, I didn't really read food blogs when I started. And I just wanted to have my own voice, you know? And
I
just wanted to do my own thing.
And
I feel like if I had looked at a lot of other stuff beforehand, then I would have been just like that. And
okay.
I didn't want to be like that. I wanted to have my own voice.
That makes sense. Yeah. You don't want to be, you know, influenced. Yeah. If you're going to be you.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Any other advice?
Yeah, I would say, just be open, you know, because like I said, making a documentary, it sort of takes you down paths that you never would imagine. And same thing with having a blog. I mean, you know, you might go in there and say, oh, I'm going to review a Mexican restaurant today. And then maybe you meet the chef or some customers. And next thing you know, you're out in the fields, you know, learning about picking strawberries. You know what I mean? Like,
right,
right. you just don't know where it's going to take you.
Okay.
So,
all right. Mm. Well, as much as you've talked about it and what you've asked others, so I feel excited I get to ask you, what is your deathbed food?
Oh my gosh. You know what, Lonnie? That is such a hard question.
Well, given what you've been exposed to, I can imagine.
Yeah. Well, that, yeah. But no, it really is. People used to ask me that a lot. And I never knew what to say. I was sort of caught off guard, you know, mm-hmm. for some reason, which is so silly. But then I started really thinking about it. And, you know, it kind of comes back to my childhood and, you know, my family. And my mom made this one dish growing up, you know, for me a lot. It's beef stroganoff.
Okay.
But it's not like the beef stroganoff that you see out a lot now, where you have like meat kind of cut up in chunks and so forth. The one that she makes is like a 1970s version. Oh, well, she still makes it. You have to have Campbell's golden mushroom soup.
right.
You have to. And it's kind of hard to find, Lonnie, but it's worth the search, okay? Campbell's golden mushroom
golden
soup.
Golden mushroom soup.
Mushroom soup, yes. And then you have ground hamburger.
Okay.
And then you have sour cream. And then you serve it over wide egg noodles. And, you know, you're good to go.
That's some home food.
Oh, my gosh. So that's it, I think. If I had to say one thing, you know, that would be it.
The deathbed food for deathbed is beef stroganoff.
Exactly.
That's phenomenal. I wasn't expecting that. Okay. With your whole foodie scene. Okay. You caught me off guard.
Yeah.
It comes back to home, like you said.
Well, it does. And, you know, I kind of like it when you call me deathbed, Lonnie. So, you know,
you're still dying.
Don't think I'm going to be upset if you do that once in a while.
I'll leave more to Mr. Zimmerman to grant you that label.
All right.
Oh, well, there you have it. My goodness. So like this, wow, this is far more insightful than what I expected in terms of some of your experiences, the exposure and pursuits and, I'm really impressed, and particularly with Ramon Rice and your documentaries. I love to hear that.
Oh, thanks.
I you know, it's, I don't know, it's 8 o'clock where I'm at. So it's probably, you know, maybe getting late for me to eat, but something tells me I'm going to be heading to the kitchen.
Yeah, you go for it.
Well,
have some guac.
Yes, yeah, I know. I actually get pretty decent praise on my guac, but that's for a different episode. So maybe we'll share recipes. So I have to thank you so much for talking with me on Beyond My Day Job, Diane.
Thank you.
You're so gracious for the time. Before we wrap up, and I don't do this, but because you've got assets out there and I want to draw attention for those that are interested in, you know, just the culinary scene and, you know, what you can read and be inspired by your encounters with chefs. So how can people read your blog and follow your posts on Twitter or any other social media?
Yeah. Well, let's see. So my website is deathbedfood.com.
Okay.
And my Twitter, which I'm most active on, is at deathbedfood.
Okay.
So I hope everyone follows. And I'm also on Instagram, deathbedfood by Diane.
Okay.
And then my film is ramonrising.film.
Got it. Wow, you got a website. That's well, impressive.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Oh, goodness, goodness. Well, Diane, thank you so much for being on Beyond My Day Job. I've learned a lot more about you, and I'm going to be tracking some more with your new project, and going to go back and read some of your previous posts, too. So thanks so much for the sharing, and hopefully you inspired some other people to take advantage of their writing or other foodie, you know, tastes or skills that they want to get into.
Yeah, I hope so. Well, thank you, Lonnie.
Thanks,
totally
Diane.
Fun.
Oh, have a wonderful night there in California.
Okay. Thanks.
All right.
You too.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
Bye.